So a story is told about two Korean War veterans who, years after the war have ended, meet up at a war memorial. And they were both POWs during this war. And at this war, at this memorial service, one person asks the other, "Have you forgiven our captors?" And this man, with anger and resentment, snaps back and says, "I have never and I will never forgive them." To which the first person said, "It sounds like they still have you captive." This story is a powerful example of why forgiveness matters. But how many people here kind of have an allergy to the word forgiveness? Sometimes. I shared on Friday evening, David and I, my son and I, went out for dinner. We had a date, my son and I. It was cool. Anyway, I told him that I was doing a talk on forgiveness on Sunday. And his first response was, "No." And then he said, "No, people don't forgive enough. And they carry stories with them. And then they believe the stories, and their lives are miserable." And I was like, okay, I'm just going to share that, and everybody can now go home. Because that's exactly the crux of the reason that forgiveness can be so challenging, and also why it's something that I'm going to ask us all to consider. Why is it so important? Well, if you think about anything where you're holding a grudge that you've been carrying with you for a while, maybe it's years old, maybe it's not quite so old, think about what happens to you when you are in that place of anger and resentment and irritation and holding on to all of that negative energy. There are a bunch of different things that I want to share with you in terms of the consequences of doing that. They all are suffering. They all cause us to suffer. First, when we are so defined by whatever happened before, that we allow that to affect who we are today, then we are limiting our gift to the world. We are, each one of us, our own ministry. I remember saying that a few weeks ago, and all of you were like, "No, I'm not a minister." But you are, each one of you, each one of us, is our own walking gift to the world. And when we allow our presence to be limited because of something from our past, we are hiding our light under a bushel. Which means that we don't have the opportunity to add to the world. To add more love and more light and more joy and more laughter and more empowerment to the people around us. We also limit our appreciation for the fact that even though some horrible things may have happened to us, chances are there were some great gifts that we developed as a strategy to cope with whatever that was. And so even in the darkest, most painful experiences of our lives, there have been some nuggets of gold that we have come away with that are now able to be gifts. Of course, it also means that when we're holding on like that, we are living in a place of misery. We're living in a place where we hurt, and we're angry, and we're resentful, and everything looks like it's negative. And perhaps the worst thing of all is that the people who harmed us or hurt us may have absolutely no clue of the impact of their words or their actions. They may be completely oblivious, or they may be aware, but they may not care. And us holding on to that anger is like us holding a hot coal, holding something where we are being burned, hoping the other person is going to feel it. And so we hang on to this self-righteous hurt, and the other person may have no clue. Nelson Mandela wrote or said, "Resentment is like drinking poison and then hoping it will kill your enemy." And we chuckle because we see that it's not a logical thing to do at one level, but at another level, don't we all do that? At some level, don't we actually kind of hold on, hoping the other person's gonna know? It doesn't really do anything. And even if the other person does know, and they are feeling sorry, and they are suffering because they've done us wrong in some way, then us holding on to the resentment just means now there's two people who are upset. We don't need to do that unless we choose to, because it is a choice. And so the idea that I want to ask you to consider today is the idea that when we forgive, we free ourselves. If you go to Wikipedia and define forgiveness, it's wordy. Forgiveness, in a psychological sense, is the intentional and voluntary process by which one may initially feel victimized or wronged, go through a change in feelings and attitude regarding a given offender, and overcomes the impact of the offense, including negative emotions such as resentment and a desire for vengeance, however justified it may be. The intentional and voluntary process by which one moves from being victimized and feeling victimized to shifting and changing feelings. Notice that in that definition, which is wordy, that it does not say forgiveness means forgetting. It doesn't say forgiveness means condoning or agreeing with what the person did. It doesn't say forgiveness means that you need to be best friends with them and keep them in your life. It does not mean that you have to marry them. It does not mean that you have to not marry them. Forgiveness is an internal process of changing yourself. And the best definition that I found, and it is attributed to Lily Tomlin, but I haven't confirmed that that's so. But it is attributed that Lily Tomlin said, forgiveness is giving up all hope for a different past. Isn't that profound? Because when you think about what it is that is keeping us in the place of lack of forgiveness, it's that we wish that we could change what happened. And what do we know? There are no changings of what happened. And so here are some ideas that I want to share with you about how we might move into this idea of forgiveness. The first is to distinguish between fantasy and fact. Remember several weeks ago, and I think I've actually shared this concept with you fairly often, the idea of optimistic and realistic, and in the gap is where suffering is, or expectation and what actually happened. And it's in that gap that we hurt, when we expect people to do things a certain way and they don't, that there's this gap, and that's where we find that we suffer. Well, this is essentially the same idea, that we have a fantasy that says our friends will never betray us, our spouses will never betray us, that if we work hard, that we will be rewarded. You know, list any one of the ideas that we have, and then we say, this is how it should be. That's fantasy. Reality is that those things happen most of the time. And for generations and generations and generations, for as long as humans have been part of this planet, what is also true is that people have betrayed each other, gone to war with each other, gossiped about each other, said nasty things behind each other's back, and so on and so on. Fantasy is we all love each other and sing kumbaya and everything is always great. Reality is that's true sometimes. And what else is true is that life includes alpha and omega, the positive and the negative, the pleasant and the unpleasant. Loyalty and betrayal. Hurt and joy. And so, one of the ways to identify when we're in this place of fantasy versus fact is to catch yourself saying the word should. Because when you have the word should in your sentence, then that's the fantasy. That's the, you know, walking into the sunset holding hands, which is a lovely fantasy and is true some of the time, but probably not all of the time. And then we have this fantasy that if there's a disagreement, that if we love each other, there is no disagreement. Fantasy. Reality. Fact. Of course there are going to be disagreements. You're two different people or two different groups of people or whatever number. One of the things, we just came back from Hawaii and we were sitting on this outdoor patio watching these people walk by, and it was magnificent to see ages and sizes and different generations all being together and different nationalities and languages. And I looked at them all and I said to Walt, like, look at this. We all got here exactly the same way Each human got here in pretty much the same way. And look at how different each one of us is. It's like a miracle. And then how do we think that we take that and we say, well, we're all like-minded? Fantasy. There's no way we can all be like-minded. We may be aligned, but my mind is never going to be the same as your mind, or your mind, or your mind, or your mind. Fantasy versus fact. Distinguish between the two. And then allow for fact to be what is part of your experience. Of course they'll disappoint you sometimes. Have you not at some time in your experience disappointed someone else? Of course, there will be times when they will say things that feel hurtful. Have you not had that experience yourself? And when we allow for fantasy and fact, and if there's some way that we can actually bridge the gap so that we are less surprised when the unpleasant fact shows itself rather than the fantasy, then we'll suffer less. Because when we have this fact, which is different from our fantasy, that's when we, like David said, we start making up stories. They were late, comma, and that means they don't respect me, they don't love me, they don't like me anymore, they were doing something else with someone else. All of that stuff, all of our suffering comes after the comma. That's another name for a talk in the future, after the comma. Because what's true is they were late. We can measure that. All that other stuff is made up. And man, we suffer because of the stories we make up. And so instead, what if we just accepted that it is true that most of the time they'll be on time and once in a while they'll be late. Most of the time, they'll be happy and joyful, and once in a while, they'll be miserable and kind of a jerk to be around. Most of the time, and once in a while. Now we get to fantasy and fact being more aligned. And that allows us to let it go. We don't need to hang on to it. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus' longest history of teaching or stories of teaching is in the Sermon on the Mount, which is found in Matthew chapter 5. And he says this, and it's, I always say this is my favorite Jesus teaching, so I have to be careful with that. But one of my favorites. Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you are on the way to court with him. Or your accuser may hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the guard, and you will be thrown in prison. And of course, if you think about this and read it at face value, you can scratch your head. Like, what are you talking about? That I'm going to be thrown in prison because I am judging something. And then we remember that metaphysically, whenever we see characters and places, we respond with the words in us. So come to terms quickly with the accuser in you. while you are on the way to making this judgment. The accuser in you will happily turn you over to the judge in you. The judge will happily lock you up so that you will be in your own prison. Some of you may know I was born in South Africa, so Nelson Mandela is an inspiration to me. When he went into prison, he was 44 years old. And when he came out, he was 71. So you think 27 years and it doesn't sound like that much, but 44 to 71, that lands for me. It wasn't much later that he was the president of the country that had imprisoned him. And he said, again, I quote, "As I walked out the door toward the gate that would lead to my freedom, I knew if I didn't leave my bitterness and hatred behind, I would still be in prison. If I didn't leave my bitterness and hatred behind, I would still be in prison." Does that mean that we shouldn't feel the anger, the upset, the hurt? Absolutely not. Of course, if someone does something that betrays us or harms us or hurts us, of course. Please don't let this be, "I didn't hurt." But let the hurt happen. And then don't let it be something where it continues to harm you. The hurt is a one-time thing. The harm is what we do to ourselves, keeping it alive. So how do we do this? First, turn the other cheek, frame it differently. When someone has hurt you in some way, take a moment and ask yourself when you've done the same thing to someone else. Chances are you have, maybe not to the same degree. And then ask yourself, what would I have wanted as a loving response when I screwed up that way? And am I willing to do that now? Am I willing to do unto the other as I would have hoped that they would have done to me? Next, find the blessing. What is it about that situation that ended up being a catalyst or a catapult for me so that I said, "No, I don't accept this. I'm going to do something else." Or, "I'm going to show you," or, "I'm going to develop the skill," and you become really good at it. Find the blessing. Perhaps the hurt we experience has done nothing more than to help us understand how we don't want to behave. Well, even that's a blessing. If there was abuse in your past, you know that you do not want to do that to anyone else. That is a blessing. It helps to think of it in terms of the clarity that you've gained because of the misery you suffered. And then, focus forward. You can't move forward effectively when you have one eye in your rearview mirror. Notice in the story that there's nothing about the accuser itself. You know, Jesus' thing, it's all about you will be sent to the judge, you will be sent to jail, you will suffer. There's nothing about what happens to the accuser. And I think there's some wisdom for us to know about that. We don't know what happened. We don't know when somebody has done something hurtful to us. It's not really our business to know where they are anymore. The person who cheated on you may be now happily married with a new family. Or they may have gone through several relationships and still be miserable. None of our business. The person who climbed over you on the corporate ladder may be president of the company, or they may have been fired. Doesn't matter. The friend who lied about you may seem popular and have a group of friends that they just look like they're having the time of their lives, or they may have lied about someone else and been found out and everyone has turned away from them. Doesn't matter. The part that matters is that it has nothing to do with you. Hard as it may be, try and get that it's not personal. And try and get that your definition of who you are need not be dependent on somebody else's opinion. Let me say that again because it's key. Your definition and understanding and love for yourself need have nothing to do. In fact, we want it to have nothing to do with someone else's opinion. Self-referenced. So I hear that there could be some yeah buts. And the one that comes to mind is, yeah, but I'll look weak. If I let them get away with it, I'm going to look weak. Well, guess what? They've already gotten away with it. Now, if you hook into them, then you're the one who's not getting away. So, unhook. Unhook. Let them get away. Why? Because it actually takes more strength to do that. To stand up and redefine yourself without that experience in your life. You keep your power, you keep your stature, you keep your sense of who you are. And Jesus was asked by Peter, how many times should I forgive my brother when he sins against me? Seven? And Jesus said, I do not say to you seven times, but 77 times. This is all to do with the idea of keeping who you are in integrity. Unhook, unlatch. This way you won't be a victim, but a victor. It means that you're not going to let that past situation carry you and allow you to define who you are in the present. Think, if you're still having difficulty, about the idea that the best thinking that you've had, carrying this weight around, has gotten you to where you are now. What does it cost to just say, meh, I don't even need to think about that in my life anymore? That's what I'm encouraging you to consider. And so, distinguish between fact and fantasy. Keep your fantasies, but allow for the fact. And they don't mean that we need to completely separate And at times it may be that that's exactly what it means. But we do it from a place of intention and calm and selfhood rather than from a place of anger. Challenge the story. Ask yourself whether it's a story that we've made up and whether we need to believe it. If peace isn't there, take time to be still, question your thinking. What other idea could add more peace? Remember that from our birthday song? Putting the principles to work. This is that exact principle. Feel your hurt. It hurts. Frame it differently. When have I done this or something similar? Find the blessing. As a result of that, am I more compassionate? Am I more empathetic? Am I more gentle? Focus on forward. We don't need to keep our eye in the rearview mirror. And in this way, we free ourselves so that we can be the blessing to the world that we are. There is freedom in forgiveness. I invite you to consider it. Freedom in forgiveness for all of us. I bless you.